Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Stop by Club Hollywood Casino Shoreline and Royal Casino Everett and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
All right, final hour here of Brock and Salk. Tomorrow we'll be getting ready for the draft, of course, and that'll be tomorrow night. All of our coverage, 710sports.com. You can text the word draft to 710-710. You can do it now to get all kinds of updates throughout the draft, every move the Seahawks make, and a nice link for all of our coverage, which will be there
online.
Can
you imagine what it would be like in any sport to be a top 10 pick? I mean, can you just even
imagine? Can I?
I mean, can you imagine?
I think you would have a better sense of it than me.
No, I was way down the 70s.
But if you had come out the year earlier, you might have been.
No, I was nothing.
Come on. If you had come out a year earlier.
There's something about a top 10 pick in a draft.
Yeah, the story is pretty incredible, and it probably doesn't get told now nearly as often as it did a while ago. And that's the story of Jim Abbott, who was the number 8 pick of the then California Angels, and actually pitched in his first pro game. It was a major league game. Never pitched in the minor leagues before pitching in the majors.
How's that even possible?
Well, you know who else that's true of is Mike Leake, who also pitched for the Reds. He's only pitched in 2 minor league games in his life.
Wow.
They were both rehab starts with AAA. So, but I've been excited to talk to Jim Abbott for a long, long time, ever since he really influenced my life when I was a young kid and had injured my hand in a water skiing accident and flew out to California the next summer and had an opportunity to see him pitch against the Yankees and throw a complete game 2-run 4-hitter. They got the loss because the Angels didn't hit too well that day, but it inspired me to find a way to go back out and play baseball again. And so I'm really happy to have Jim Abbott here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Good morning, Jim. How are you? Thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Brock. Great to be with you. I read the story this morning online of the accident you had, and I was really touched by the inspiration and the story. Painful memory, losing 2-0 on a 4-hitter, but there was some good that came out of that day.
Yeah, there was. I'll tell you. I we have questions for you, and there's things I want to know, but more than anything, and I did write this, I just want to say thank you. When I wrote this yesterday and people wrote back to me and said, thank you, that's inspirational, thank you for being vulnerable, I didn't really think of it that way. I don't think of my story as really being either of those things. I just think of it as my story. And I don't know whether you feel the same way. I'm sure in your life so many people have told you thank you for the inspiration that eventually you start to believe it. But I want to add myself to that list and just say thank you. It was incredibly inspirational for me as a 12, at that point, 13-year-old kid to see you do what you were doing. And I guess that's all I really wanted to say was thank you.
Well, I really appreciate that, Mike. I did what I love to do, and I think you probably did too. I love to play baseball. I love to play sports. I grew up in Flint. You know, obviously, my circumstances were a little bit different. I was born this way, so it was all I ever knew. And it was just a matter of finding a different way of doing things. I had wonderful support in Flint, Michigan, people who pulled me into the game, literally helped me to find different ways to hold a baseball bat and to switch the glove on and off, and that made all the difference in my life. But the fact that people gained inspiration from my story or used it to help children or help their own kids fight through adversity is something that I've really come to appreciate later on in life, and it's a nice part of my story, and I'm very heartened and touched by all the wonderful stories that I've been able to hear and be inspired by.
Yeah, former big leaguer Jim Abbott with us. I guess I'll ask you that one, Jim. Is when did you start to feel the reach of your platform?
Brock, I really didn't. I guess in the major leagues. Back then, there wasn't the 24-hour news cycle that there is now, but people started to follow my story when I was kind of the human interest story of the week for a while back, when I was in high school. And I went to New York City to be on Good Morning America and Parade Magazine and all these different things. But it wasn't until I got to the big leagues and started going to those ballparks, and you never take it for granted being able to play in those stadiums. But families started to come, moms and dads and little boys and little girls facing, all kinds of challenges. And, and, And I had so many many meetings around the the country, and it really started to impact me to see how many people were out there, you know, facing similar things as I was facing, and even more challenging, and that's when it started to hit me. But like I said, I loved baseball. I wanted to be the best possible pitcher I could be. I wanted to make an impact. I didn't want to just make it. I wanted to stay. I wanted to be competitive. And I felt like if there was a role model to be played in that, if there was inspiration in that, that maybe kids out there could see that you just aren't participating. You know, you can be good. You can make an impact. You can contribute. And really, that was kind of my goal.
How did you feel at the beginning when they first bring you out to New York and you go on Good Morning America or something like that? And, you know, you're a high school kid. Did you feel, is it pride? Is there some level of embarrassment? How do you handle that first moment where, as you said, you're sort of the story of the week?
I think there was great pride, because there was an acknowledgement of some success and, doing well on the field. I think that came along with it. So I enjoyed that pat on the back for sure. And then, after a while, I did start to pull back a little bit from it because I realized that so many of the stories began with a label, one-handed pitcher or one-armed pitcher, and I didn't like that. I wanted to move past it, and I wanted to be known for how well I pitched and the ability that was there. And I see so many parallels now in Shaquem Griffin's story, a young man playing out of Central Florida and hoping to be drafted this week. And I root for him so hard. I see here the same exact things that I was saying at that age. I feel the same things that he's feeling and just wanting to be known as a good football player, just want to be acknowledged for the ability that's there and not the perceived disability.
How about the platform now? And Jim Abbott with us, former major league star and pitcher and legend, did it for a long time, and you accomplished your goal, right? People knew you as an unbelievable pitcher through your years in the big leagues as well. How about your platform now, Jim? How often do you get an opportunity to do this, to share some of your story even today?
It's amazed me, Brock. I get a chance to speak. I recoil from the from the term motivational speaker. Maybe I don't like any labels at all, but I just had a speaking event yesterday, and I have a chance to get out there and really share experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly, what it was like to be forced to find different ways of doing things, and what it was like to struggle and be teased and to build up a defense against that and to learn to value your own opinion as opposed to those of others. So I've been so gratified, to have that forum, to have a place where people, connect, I hope. And then social media nowadays, it's such a crazy world out there and it can be used in so many different ways. But, I'm able to connect and hear so many stories with people from around the world, really. It's really very touching, at my age, to still have that connection and to still have people who connect with my playing days.
Were you teased as a kid?
Absolutely. I faced my share of negativity. I had a lot of love and support in Flint, Michigan. I grew up in a tough town. No quarter was given. You had to earn your way, and it's still that way on those streets there. But, I don't focus on that too much because I use sports to win people over, and that was my outlet. That was my fight. And to be on a team, that high school varsity jacket in Flint, Michigan, meant something. To get that, to be on those teams, that was my way to fight back against the awkwardness and the second glances. And I don't know what your experience was in that regard, but sports really helped me to find my sense of belonging and to push back. In those lonely times and when you're feeling a little outside of things, to go throw a ball against a brick wall or to go shoot some baskets, that really was my outlet and provided me a lot of strength.
Yeah, I get it. I was teased, but not for my hand, more just for my personality and other other various things people found dislikable about me. It's true to this day, so it has nothing to do with the hand thing. It's just being kind of a jerk and people finding ways to tease you about it. You know, it's interesting, though, because one of the replies to my tweet yesterday was somebody saying, yeah, Jim Abbott taught a generation of 12-year-old boys not to tease people for those reasons, and that somebody who can, you know, fight through a disability, everything they can do with it. You know, we talked earlier just about inspiration and you inspiring me not to become a major leaguer, but just to go back and play the game that I loved. Who inspired you? I mean, who did you look to as a role model to get to the point you eventually did?
You know, I looked up to professional athletes, and there weren't a ton of stories of people out there who were like me, you know. So I didn't. You know, nowadays it's so much easier to connect with these stories, but back then, so I grew up loving, you know, Brock, the University of Michigan football, and watching games at the Big House, and Rick Leach playing a quarterback there, and the Detroit Tigers, and Jack Morris, and Alan Trammell, and Lou Whitaker, and those guys served as an inspiration to me, and you know, trying to make it and trying to be successful, and you know, like I said, I think Shaquem Griffin would agree with me that you don't always just gravitate towards, you know, people with a disability or people with, you don't always feel like you have to be grouped into that. You know, you can relate to anybody you want to relate to. You can find inspiration anywhere. And for me, that was the case growing up.
Hey, last thing for me here, and Jim Abbott with us, former big league pitcher. You mentioned Shaquem a couple different times, and we saw that you were tweeting about him this morning. Jim, I got a chance to call the Peach Bowl, and I'm really thankful I did because we got to be around him, and he came in our production meeting. And we know Shaquem a little in this market through his brother, his twin brother, who was drafted by the Seahawks, had a great rookie year, is going to be an excellent player. But as I watched Shaquem, as Dave Fleming watched Shaquem, as our producer and director and our entire production team watched Shaquem, we were just blown away. If you watched him and you saw him and you followed his story, is it one that still kind of brings that spark even to you, who inspired so many, like Saul, because we celebrated his 40th on Saturday and reached out to you? As you watched Shaquem, is it something that still, I guess, moves your needle?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was watching UCF play Michigan a couple falls ago. It was not this season, it was previous season. And I knew nothing about him. And all of a sudden, they showed this piece, and I stood up off my chair. I said, "You got to be kidding! What's going on here? How didn't I? I didn't even notice." Which is a great testament to his ability, right? It's like, "Oh wow, look at this!" And so I've been following him ever since. And obviously, they had the tremendous year, and I just relate so much in the fact of his great determination. I watched his combine performance, and just you could see the grit and the belief and the you know, wanting to show people in every step of that 40-yard dash and every bench press rep and you know, that's just it's just so cool. It's just so cool. He doesn't have to be a role model to anybody. He can just go out and do what he does and be the person that he is and let us all sit back and take from that story what we can. And I hope he's able to keep going. But for all that he's done so far, he will never know the impact that he's already had in his young life.
So I was asking around about you before, and this was the scouting report I got on Jim Abbott. Maybe Jim, this will make sense to you. Hey, that's great. He's going to come on. This is a text message I got. Awesome guy, very humble, tremendous athlete, great cut fastball and slider. that came from a former catcher of yours who we've gotten to know here in Seattle, Scott Servais, who I know you played with in 1988 on the team that went to the Olympics. What do you remember of Scott?
Scotty was, I played for two summers with Scott in the USA team at the Pan American Games and then the Olympics out of Creighton, and he was always, a cerebral player. He was always... you could just see him being a coach someday, a college coach or a manager or, you know, somebody involved in the game. And, you know, I think he'll tell you it was great playing with him. That team was just so cool. It was, you know, to play for the United States and Scott, you know, all these guys came from all over the country. Robin Ventura from Oklahoma State and Tino Martinez from Tampa. And, you know, our head coach was from Stanford. Our pitching coach was from LSU. And, And to walk into a we trained in Millington, Tennessee. We all met in these Army barracks or Navy barracks, I believe. And everybody had come from all over the country and came together, and it was an amateur team with one goal, and to get to the Olympics. And it was such an amazing experience, the best team I ever played on. And Scott was a huge part of the USA baseball teams at that point. I think he had played even on some teams as a younger player, too. So not surprising to see where he's at in the game today.
Hey, last thing, Jim. You worried about Harbaugh out there in Ann Arbor? what are we feeling with the football team?
I'm not worried at all.
All right.
You know, he had a great first 2 years, and just, you know, the offense struggled a little bit with some injuries last year at the quarterback position. You know, it's hard to do something when you're struggling there. But I'm just so happy the Big Ten has become so incredibly competitive. I remember just a few years ago, everybody saying the Big Ten's over, no one's going to go to a Rust Belt school, and all of a sudden, you know, you have three or four of the top programs in the same conference in the same, you know, it's just ultra competitive. So I love Coach Harbaugh. I think he's got us on the right path, and I'm always hoping for good things.
Well, we appreciate it, man. This is a thrill for me. Thank you for taking a few minutes to come on. Scott's been telling me for a few years that you'd be a great guest on the show. And I don't know, maybe Brock was saying earlier, as I get ready to turn 40 here, maybe it's a time people do sort of look back in their life and want to say thank you to those who have helped. And I don't know, it was crazy looking up and realizing you're only 10 years old, you're only 50 years old. I mean, when you're 12, 13,
right,
somebody playing in the big league seems like they're like hundreds of years older than you. And, you know, you're 10 years old, you're only 50. So that's great. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Jim.
Well, happy birthday, Mike, and thanks for having me on, and wish Scott my best. Always had fun playing up there in Seattle.
Will do. All right, there you go. There's Jim Abbott, a legend,
Thank you, Jim. Major League Baseball.
Takes a few minutes with us there on the Venue Kings Hotline. That's pretty awesome, man. His story is great.
Yeah, there's not many that you could look up to and have on a phone and be that unbelievably gracious.
And his story is, to me, incredible, and he's right. At the time, you know, there's no Twitter, there's no social media. The world was not as connected to itself or to each other. So, you know, how did I hear about Jim Abbott? I mean, yeah, I remember reading a Sports Illustrated story on it, but it's not like there was endless video.
No.
Right? I mean, it's not like I would then just go online and find all the Jim Abbott video. There wasn't any. I mean, there's no way to find any of that unless you caught it on This Week in Baseball or something like that. Or the local news, maybe they had they showed a pitch or something like that. Yeah. So it was, to go out and to travel across the country to California and see him pitch in person, it was really meaningful to him. And it's, I don't know, a bunch of parts of that story are interesting to me. He talking about being teased as a kid, and I'm really lucky. That did not, I mean, I joke, well, no. I've been teased for plenty of things not related to my hand.
Sure.
But that's never really, I was lucky in that regard. I don't know, maybe by the time the 90s rolled around, like that just, I feel like kids had kind of been given an education and things like that. Maybe they'd seen guys like Jim Abbott or other people succeed with disabilities. And I'm not saying it doesn't still happen or that people don't get teased for being different, but I do get the sense that it was probably worse when he was growing
up. I'll tell you what, man.
But I have a couple of specific memories and one or two people who've made comments to me over the years and the various ways I retaliated. They were swift and generally with great fire and brimstone. Like, I mean, it's cool to hear. I don't know. I don't have a ton more to say. I just think it's cool.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, if you were in the production meeting with Shaquem Griffin that we were in.
Yeah, let's switch to him because he's awesome.
You would have heard the exact same thing. I mean, I was sitting there listening to Jim, and he's a 50-year-old guy that's been there and done it, and Shaquem is, what, 23? That is just on the precipice of his professional career, but they're the same thing. Shaquem's like, I don't look at myself that way. I'm not. I'm a football player.
I get it. I would feel the same way, and I am not in the same position, but I'll just speak from a small amount of experience. Even yesterday, having people saying, oh, thank you for sharing, your story's inspiring, or you're being vulnerable, I don't feel that way. I don't feel vulnerable about it. I'm just talking just the way my life went.
And for Jim, he mowed people down.
Yeah. And he was actually good.
He was unbelievable.
Right.
And for Shaquem,
he's actually inspiring because he succeeded.
And for Shaquem Griffin, even when he was, having to earn it and he was a special teamer and he wasn't getting any reps and George O'Leary and the old staff didn't think he could do it and was really brought there just because Shaquille was so good, they kind of brought him along. And Scott said, no, dude, you run 4.38, 225 pounds. You're pretty good. And then you become the defensive player of the year in the conference and All-American and everything else. And Shaquem is just like, don't look at me that way. Don't look at me. I'm a football player.
So why isn't he going to be a first round pick?
I think just because of some fit positionally in the NFL. That would be the reason.
So you don't think – I don't think it's just that. I mean, I think people will take him. He'll be probably a third or fourth round pick. Somebody will take a chance. But I think that that general managers in football, just like they do in any sport, it's hard to see something that doesn't look right.
Yes, but you're
it doesn't look like everything else you see. And in this case, you have to trust that he's going to be able to use the same non-traditional ways of getting around people to get to the quarterback that worked in college on pros.
Yes. The challenge,
you have to trust that.
I think the challenge, and you're right. There's absolutely still going to be some bias.
It's not easy for every GM.
No, there's absolutely still going to be some bias, but the productivity is so off the charts. And what they're going to do in why is, okay, where do you fit in the NFL? Mm. Are you an NFL linebacker down in and down out? Are you an NFL defense? And you see this with highly productive collegiate players, Mike. There's so many of them.
Why is that being looked at as a negative? I mean, it seems like he could play three positions in the NFL.
Well, it's yes and no. That the NFL game is so massive. We've talked to Pete about this with a guy, and a little bit maybe more off the record, you know, so we're not going to name any names, but guys that were very good college players. But when you're undersized and light in the NFL, and these guys get a hand on you, you're done. You know, it is very hard to do it and sustain it when you're just undersized.
Can the Seahawks get him in this draft? Can they please end up with Shaquem Griffin?
It's a pretty big linebacker class, too. I mean, pretty impressive linebacker
it
class
is.
As well.
It is. And is he a...
But is there any of them you'd rather have than this guy? Just for the...
No,
for,
obviously I mean, not. For 18th pick, let's go.
Everything we've heard from the Seahawks and what they want to do, like, I would just be overjoyed if they could come away from this draft weekend.
Well, I'll tell you what. They want speed. You know, Barkevius Mingo's here because of speed. Now, he's 250 pounds and 6'4". And
who do you think's a better player, this guy or Barkevius Mingo? Legitimate question.
Yeah.
This guy. I'll be willing to bet on it. I'd absolutely be willing to bet on it.
Me having a handicap sticker wasn't something that I wanted. I mean, for me, the handicap word was always like, if you handicap, that means you're limited to things that you can do. I mean, I'm not limited to nothing. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, when you run 4.38,
yeah,
that cuts through.
I would
right?
Say
I mean, I think that as much as anything else. We could talk about the 220 pounds and kind of in between and end and linebacker. But you run 4.38 with his kind of tape, he's going to get drafted. He wasn't even invited to the combine, all right? The initial scouting service, if we want to talk about bias, not the NFL, the initial scouting service and their bias said, nope, not even going to get you to the combine. And finally, that door was slammed, you know, open, and he went to the Senior Bowl. He went to the combine. He blew it up. He's going to get drafted in the first three rounds.
All right. You can follow all of our draft coverage at 710sports.com. And again, just text the word draft to 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Text the word draft, and we'll keep you guys informed. Text messages to let you know everything the Seahawks are doing as they're doing it. Some more texts coming in, as we said here. Salk is so excited, his chin is trembling. All right. Lay off the butt chin, okay? There's no reason to go there today. That's just an unfair shot. And then another saying, Saul, you think maybe you would have been teased more for your hand if you didn't have so many other easier things for kids to pick on you for? You know, I hadn't thought about it that way, but thanks for bringing it up. Earl Thomas is still a Seahawk. Will that still be true when we come in Friday morning? It's next. I'm Brock and Saul.
Heritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. Award-winning spirits, including BSB and BSB 103. Brown sugar bourbon at 103 proof. Throw your tongue the heater. You can't spell baseball without the BSB Lounge. Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Yeah. Good morning, friends.
Yeah, Lydia, a lot of people texting in today saying they missed their good morning friends at 6 o'clock since
can you
overslept and didn't make it in.
Can you give me a good
Thanks,
morning,
guys.
Friends?
A lot of people hoping they could just hear you say that once today.
Good morning, friends.
See, doesn't that just make everything better?
Right.
Ah, I'm in such a better mood. That's so great.
Joey's really mad. He had to do up-downs.
Lydia's going to be doing up-downs. Joey,
I'm ready.
Now, the difference is Joey made an excuse. Lydia did not make
That's
any excuses.
Very
she
true.
Just came in.
Very true.
So because of that, there's sort of a debate as to whether or not she should have to do up-downs
right.
the way Joey did.
Oh, I absolutely
did.
Should. Right. Yeah, we'll do them after
Will
the
you do up-downs? How many did Joey do?
10.
10 up-downs?
Yeah.
Or was it a minute's worth?
Clothes were flying everywhere, you know, body parts everywhere. He was just a mess, sweating.
I ran into a friend of yours, Joey, and actually showed them the video of you doing the up-downs. I don't know whether that made it back to you. Oh, it did. Oh, good. Good. Intern Joey showed up late one day, and Brock made him do some up-downs.
Well, mostly because I said if he walks in here with an excuse,
right.
He's doing up-downs.
And he did.
Oh, traffic. Oh, I-5.
So what's the excuse on the Seahawks not trading Earl Thomas? Because it sure seems like they have wanted to do so, and now we see sit here, a day and a half before the draft actually starts, and nothing. It still hasn't happened. I'm with you, and I think John Clayton, that once the draft gets underway, not that it would be impossible for them to trade Earl, yeah, but I think that the day is today, right? They're not going to do it during the draft.
$10 if you remember the name of the player the Claytons referenced.
It was like Barbie something, right? Barbie.
I don't know.
Barbie Koa? I forget the guy's name.
Hey, John, go in your database. Who was a player? Oh, yeah, it was Capri Barbie. Barbie.
Barbie Koa? What, who was that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not been a player of the level of prominence. And yeah, I don't know, Mike. This is one I'm a little torn on. This is a little your Gorilla Glass going way back when Mike Sulk went on vacation, I think when he was like 34, he'll be 40 on Saturday.
All right.
He went on vacation,
right,
and he came home.
Be a jerk.
And it was the whole Peyton Manning. You know, it was like, Seahawks got to get Peyton Manning. Like, I don't care. Mike, he didn't get on the plane. I don't care. Like, Paul.
I was very hard headed.
Paul Allen had the jet, and Pete and John were on it. They had Coors Lights in there. They had a Budweiser distributorship for Peyton. They were all ready to go. Peyton wouldn't get on the plane, and you came back and said, yeah, Gorilla Glass.
Got to get it done.
Yes, Steve Jobs, you know, they told him the same thing. You can't have this glass. Nope, we are going to have this glass on this iPhone, and you're going to get it done.
They did.
And I'm kind of torn on this because I want these guys to get it done. Like, I don't care what the market is.
But the market is what it is.
Can you affect leverage? Can you affect sales? Can you affect, you know, is there a way, you know, present? Is there somehow, as you look back on this,
I don't think you really can. I think you can try, and you can try to convince yourself, and you can do all the little things you want. But at the end of it, you know, somebody has to step up and want to trade for Earl Thomas, and they have to want to give you what you require for it. And
so, I guess, does that demand diminish?
I have to believe
if it takes two sides, and we're first, and we're first, and we're first, and we're first, and we finally get to tomorrow morning, an hour before the draft, sometime tomorrow.
Deadlines spur action.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And we finally get to that deadline before the draft, and Jerry in Dallas or somebody says, okay, enough's enough. I know what you wanted, but are you really going to play this thing out? Are you really going to play? And I don't, you know, I know Earl's agent said, hey, he's not going to hold out, but you want to start this thing anew? You really want to rev the engines again with a lot of young people and everything else and not have Earl there till training camp? And even when he's there, you know, maybe have a hamstring here or a calf there and protect his interest.
Brock, all those things are true, and you're right. Maybe deadline spur action and ends up happening with Dallas or whatever. But I kind of come away with this with a different feeling. And that is, the way you get beyond that deadline thing is that you have multiple teams interested. And then instead of it being a battle of wills, I want a first, I only want to give up a second or whatever, it ends up being, well, this team's willing to do it. Are you? Yeah. Well, this team's willing to go here. Are you willing to go higher?
That's always the best leverage.
Well, but they don't have that leverage. Nope. They haven't been able to come up, apparently, with a third team to make this a bidding war of any sort for Earl Thomas. And so at that point, it leads me to wonder, why are the Seahawks players so unvaluable around the league?
And I'm sorry, I just can't buy into this. And I continue to hear it. No, not that.
Oh, okay, because this is 2 years in a row. They've tried to trade a player and haven't gotten diddly squat back for
him. I continue to hear, it's not a big deal. He's missed the first 2 weeks. He'll miss the next 3 weeks. He'll miss all these OTAs. He's Earl Thomas. It's not a big deal. He'll be there for 3 days in a 180-day offseason. He'll be there for 3 days of work, and it really don't matter. They're pros. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, it didn't matter the last few years. It really didn't matter at all. Michael Bennett was a no-show. It really didn't matter. You don't think any of that attitude, any of that behavior,
I think it matters a lot. What I want to know is why their players aren't worth anything. Why can't they get anything back for these guys? Why couldn't they get anything back for Richard Sherman? Why was Michael Bennett only worth a fifth-round pick? Why can't they seem to get a deal done for Earl Thomas? And maybe by tomorrow, this entire conversation will be moot and they'll get something done. But at the moment, I find myself wondering why these guys that have had as much success as they've had here, why aren't they worth anything?
Yeah, I would say, and you could give me Dwayne Brown, and I will say Dwayne Brown is a left tackle. Left tackles and quarterbacks still get value.
Who's a better player, Dwayne Brown or Earl Thomas?
Earl Thomas is a better player. He's at a different position.
I know, but who's a better player?
Okay, well, what about
Why
Alec
is the NFL
Ogletree?
So weird?
What about Alec Ogletree? What about Marcus Peters? What about all these guys as you look at the trade value with them? This is a young stud linebacker.
Did they give up a first-round pick for Marcus Peters?
No.
What'd they give up?
Like a second and a...
Same thing.
Yes. No, I don't think so.
All right,
Dwayne
fine.
Brown, not a first.
All right, so I'm screwing up what my picks are worth. Leave me alone.
The NFL is
getting
an interesting
old.
Thing, too, because it's rare that a veteran goes from one team to another and is ever as good as he was before. And that's been pretty much true through the history of time in the NFL, unlike the NBA and unlike Major League Baseball.
Interesting, Howdy. Is that all half-cocked or is that well thought out with players?
No, I mean, find some examples of guys who were better than on their previous team when they left as veterans.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Brees is one that comes to mind, you know, but he wasn't that old, but he left San Diego and went to New Orleans, you know, and at that position, but
there are not many.
No, nope. And certainly at position, skill position-wise, you get beat up and you slow down, and that's probably why Dez Bryant. You know, you can say the same
Eric
thing.
Eric Dickerson was still really good. I mean, there's definitely examples, but I understand your point.
Yeah. Not like baseball or basketball where those commodities do get traded, and some of it is scheme fit. Some of it is the, what you have said before,
on,
the deteriorating
man, but
asset.
Look over the last couple. Jimmy Graham still gets a first-round pick. Marcus Peters gets a second and a fourth. Percy Harvin got a first round. I mean, like, plenty of players out there still generate enough to at least get a late first round pick. Earl Thomas should be in that league. He's one of the better players out there.
You would hope so.
Or at the very least, a second and third, or a couple of seconds, or next year's first, or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'll hold out hope. I'll hope that this thing gets done here. Marshall Faulk, there's another good example, had even more success
in
his career. It seems to be running back, seemed to be the most common position for that.
I asked Howdy. Sometimes you got to be careful, Howdy. Like, if it's totally well thought, I'm with you. I think I said that to you. Did I say that to you on the trip, Howdy?
Mm.
I think I did say that to you one time. I'm like, have you thought through this, or is this just kind of like
a... Thanks, Theron. Kind of in a little bit. Hey, Mariners will be taking on the White Sox today, 11 o'clock first pitch. Felix will be on the mound to take on big game James Shields, who they lit up last year here at Safeco and the White Sox. You can change it up with Heritage Distilling's BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon. That's your pitching matchup for today.
Ready, aim, fire, or ready, fire, aim?
With Howdy?
Yeah.
I think
a little bit both
know.
Every once in a while.
How about Reggie White? Was he better or worse once he went to Green Bay?
I don't know.
I'm just going through a couple of names that are coming in here. How about Marshawn Lynch? Was he better in Buffalo or here in Seattle?
How about that DN that won like six titles? Charles Haley. He was all right. Yeah,
I don't know.
Who knows? Ready, fire, aim.
I mean, Deion Sanders is only good at the beginning. I kind of fit or kind of just faded away.
Let's just get to answer the question.
All right, let's do it. We need your question. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Any question, any subject, Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril, Chris Clemens. Any question, any subject, you text us. We'll answer it next on Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from, and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, wrapping up today's show by answering your questions. It's been a fun one, man. I really enjoyed today. Thank you for everyone for indulging me and allowing me to talk to somebody who made a difference in my life, Jim Abbott. If you missed it, be up on the podcast page shortly at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app.
And of course, the guy
that's
you admired.
By Puget Sound Acura dealers. Course, Mike Zanino was great too.
Yeah,
huh?
Of course, the guy you admired had to be such a good talker.
Right.
Jeez. Can you imagine? Guy, I admired Andre the Giant.
What? Yeah, how come we never got him on the show?
Big John Studd.
Right.
King Kong Bundy. Jeez, guys I really looked up to. None of them could talk like
Howdy's guy who he looks up to, Mike Zanino, was great today.
Jeez.
Yeah, he even confirmed what everyone had long, you know, doubted whether or not I actually helped. And he sure did.
Are you playing sound?
I'd love
or
to play it, but I don't have a computer to play sound.
Good,
so.
Yeah. It's funny how that works.
We don't have it
didn't
either.
Actually happen.
Sorry.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry, Kyle.
Okay, pal.
All right, let's see what we got from you guys.
Next question.
Do you jerks think you could lay down a bunt on an MLB pitcher?
No. Bunts are terrifying. Your fingers. My hands, anyway. I get such big hands. I hate a bunting. Like, where's my hand go behind it? That was a humble brag. No, thank you.
I feel like I could do it.
Nope.
I know I can't.
You wouldn't square around a 95.
I know. That's the pro. Just coming in so freaking fast. Yes. But I feel like, I think if I practice it, I could. I was a good bunter. Like, that was probably the one thing I was good at.
Really?
Yeah, and I think bunting ultimately is not that hard. You know who looked terrible bunting and he laid down a good bunt the other day? It was Heredia. Mm. Maybe that's why he got sent down. Mm. Oh. His bunting good form was atrocious.
How's Ichiro's?
I'd imagine good.
You ever seen him bunt?
Like, sacrifice bunt?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Don't
have
think
you?
So. Uh-uh.
I don't think I've ever seen each other.
How do you get your computer up now?
He's got the almost like a softball-esque slap hitting, as they would call it, where you just make contact and it's a continuous swing/run.
Yeah, that's cool when guys can do that.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
You hit the ball as you're running. Johnny mm-hmm. Damon could kind of do that. Only lefties can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty cool.
Next question.
You got your computer up running now?
I do, yeah. Mike Zanino is saying that I actually did help.
Nobody cares. What kind of advice did he give you that's helped so much?
I mean, a little bit of everything. Heck, I mean, you've seen how it's turned since then, so obviously the good stuff.
Obviously the good stuff.
That was actually my fault. I was watching a video of Marvin Harrison chasing one of his tenants with a baseball bat.
Oh, no. Is that new video?
Yeah, it just came out like a few minutes ago.
Stay away from Marvin.
Yeah, Marvin wants his money.
I mean, I would hope that he could catch the
guy. Well, he's done worse. Yeah. Alleged.
I would hope Marvin would win that race.
He seemed to be more just kind of trying to intimidate and be menacing with a wooden baseball bat.
You ever do that to you in the locker room?
No.
Okay.
Next question.
What?
Jerks, when we look back in 4 years, how will the Jakes rank? Locker, Browning, Eason, Sermon, and I'll throw in Hayner. How will we end up ranking the Jakes?
The great Jakes.
The five great Jakes.
Number one will always be Jake Locker.
For niceness alone.
He's just the best.
Who will rank? How will you rank them?
Jake Locker, Jake Browning, Jake Eason, Jake Hayner.
Are we ranking? Jake Sermon won't even get ranked.
Yeah.
Are we ranking them based on their performance at UW?
Yeah,
potential
sure.
For NFL
absolutely.
Career
no, their performance at UW.
At UW alone?
Or just
well,
in life.
It's more difficult. It would probably be for Eason to be higher up on the list based solely on like time he's going to spend.
How
here.
Can it not be Jake Browning number one? The guy
Jake
brought
Locker,
them
number one
because Jake Browning brought them to a Final Four game.
Jake Locker made that program relevant again.
They were 0-12. They were done. They were.
Jake Browning brought them to the verge
of
a national championship.
John Ross in the number one.
It is not close.
If Jake Locker had the number one defense in the country or in the conference, as Jake Browning has had in a run game, and everything else,
he would not have gotten to that
same point. Locker, Browning, East. I think I'm with you, Howdy. Well done. Well sorted.
You guys are wrong.
Next question.
Jerks, did you guys hear about the Seattle Seawolves Professional Rugby Club? And what is your take on it initially? As they won their inaugural match and have another one slated for this weekend at Starfire.
Excellent sideline reporter.
Jessamine's going to be doing the sidelines tonight on CBS Sports.
Excellent,
she has been
Jess.
Studying up every day in the sports bit. It's amazing.
We got Pittman doing the PA, I think. He was reading Rugby for Dummies.
That's awesome.
Brock and I should have read that before we went to Ireland.
Maybe we could have got in that English pub.
That was so funny. So
we wouldn't.
We were in Ireland.
Sorry, not serving you
three
two.
Straight years during their big rugby tournament time of year. And so the 1 year was a big, big year for them. So Ireland was going to take on England in the finals.
Mm.
And the English had won their first few matches. And so if they won this last one, they were going to complete the sweep. They called it the Grand Slam of rugby. And Ireland defeated them to salvage it. And we were psyched. We were rooting for Ireland. We were there in Ireland. Yeah, we were so excited. We went out afterwards like, let's go to one of these pubs. These guys are all going to be psyched. And we walked into a pub that only served was for English people.
Yeah, they're like,
they were morose.
We're closed. You're not closed. There's a lot of people here.
Get out.
Yeah, you're not served here.
Yeah. It was terrible.
Yeah. Then you faked the English accent. You couldn't even get.
No, it didn't work. The guys on that. Pre- and post-game show and halftime show, the best thing you've ever heard.
Best ever.
Old Muppets screaming at each other. I mean, like,
You don't have a clue what you're talking about. I said this back in 2008.
They're like yelling back and forth.
So good.
It was awesome.
No filter. None.
All right, let's see. Oh, we're already done?
Whoa. I had a good contagious question, but we'll save it for tomorrow.
How does a five-person sports radio show not know what a drag bunt is? I think we know what a drag bunt is.
Yep.
You were talking about the slap hit, though, right? Not just
a
bunt.
Yeah, I was comparing the slap hit from softball. So,
but as you sort of are running down the line, you kind of like swipe at it. It's not really a bunt.
That was a shot at you, Lydia. That's messed up.
I think we know what a bunt is. I deserve it today.
How many alarms tomorrow morning, Lids? A couple different alarms?
Are you going to be buying?
I already have three, so I'm going to add a fourth.
All right.
Are they all on the same device? Oh, we got to run.
Oh, we got to go. See ya.
Turn it over to Mariner pregame show and then Mariner baseball. We'll catch you guys tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock for draft day. Until then, the hay.
Bart.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!